All right, so don't forget, give me any kind of extra credit that you have done through the semester, and that will be counted towards your grade. Could be things like a MOOC, your Sunday night prayer group, the missions videos. Also, some have asked me, like, what if I read this book on missions? That's fine, too. Like, if you read anything above and beyond this class when it's connected to missions, that's fine. I'm happy to include that as well, as long as it's not necessarily for another class. So, trying to think of any other things that might be included. If you feel like it could potentially be extra credit, just let me know, and I'll say yes or no. Probably yes. Yeah. Pat. I'm letting the heat up, so I will. Yeah. Thank you for keeping an eye out for me. I do appreciate you watching out for me, Pat. Thanks. Well, we talked about supporters and how we as missionaries can communicate with our supporters in an authentic way. So we're going to finish talking about that. We're going to move into a discussion of what is a profile? What are the things that should be a part of a missionary and a pastor and a church? So what are the characteristics, what are the core components for these individuals or organizations? So we'll talk about that more as a discussion, and then I'll include parts of our discussion in notes that I will give on Tuesday. So Tuesday we're going to kind of wrap everything up and have a final final lecture discussion, and then the final exam will be at your leisure whenever during this break. I'll give you a specific set of a time frame, I guess, for you to take that. And again, the final is not going to be really objective questions. It's going to be subjective as you reflect and interact on the material that we've talked about and just give your thoughts. So it's not going to be hard. It's just something that I want you guys to be thinking through and kind of processing some of the things that we've talked about. We've talked about a lot in this class. And I just want an opportunity for you to go through and just do some reflection in these ideas that we've been discussing. So, and I'll tell you now, if you do the test, you're going to get almost full points just for doing it. So that's kind of the way I'm thinking about this exam. It's not to judge how, you know, how much you have learned. It's just to make you think, and hopefully it will be encouraging to you, and just kind of pull together some of the things that are related to this class. But we talked about supporters. I think so much of our discussions in missions classes is how do we get supporters, right? How do we get people to sign up and to send us money? And I'm struggling now as I even prepare for missions prep. That's a lot of times the way we think about raising support or going to the mission field. It's all about money, and we've tied ourselves to this idea of finances. And I feel like it causes so many difficulties down the line. So when it comes to support, I think there are two things that are of most importance when we are raising support. And I think if you do these two things, God will bring the funds in. So raising support really shouldn't be this difficult, challenging thing, this daunting task for us. I think we should approach it kind of nonchalantly, casually, and like, yeah, whatever. If God gives us, raises the money, then that's great. That's confirmation that we're doing what he wants us to do. But this kind of cavalier attitude really, I think, is a mark of some of the best missionaries that I've seen on the field. They're not the ones who are worried, like, I need this amount of money. And so they're not the ones with the thermometers that say we're at 76.5%. You know, they're the ones who's like, yeah, if God brings in the money, I'm going anyway. Those are the kind of missionaries that I want you guys to be. That's what I want you to strive for. So there are two things that I think are most important when it comes to raising support. We've talked about these indirectly. I just want to make it clear. First is you're raising not financial support. You're raising prayer support. You're getting people to rally behind you in prayer. And if you do that, don't worry about the money. The money will fall. God will move in the hearts of people if they're praying for you. And the supporters that God wants to have for you, He will move in their hearts and direct them to give. That's pretty easy. The other thing is having a focus in your vision. If you are somebody who stands up, and you might not be the most charismatic person, you might not be the best speaker in the world, but if people can sense the fact that you are committed to the mission, that you have a vision for ministry, that's the kind of people, that's the kind of missionary that people want to support. If you get up and say, you know, I'm not sure what God wants us to do, we pray for us, we want to be involved in mission somehow, that's not a good way to present to people. You need, not just in order to present to people, you need for yourself, you need a calling and a vision for your ministry. If you have that, if you say, listen, I've been called to the mission field, and this is my purpose, this is my vision, this is my mission in life. People are like, wow, okay, I can get behind that, I can support that. So there's no room for this kind of wishy-washiness in your vision or mission. So before you have a chance to stand up and present to a group of people about your ministry, make sure you know what you're going to be saying. Make sure you know what your vision and mission are. Any comments or questions about that? The other thing related to that is this idea of what supporters should you have? I think for missions, you need to cast a broad net, but you need to be very choosy about the type of fish you keep, right? And there's a lot of people that are, I might call them catch and release supporters. So they might be interested in supporting you, but you want to be very careful and say, why don't you just pray for me right now? Because their motivations, they might have ulterior motives. They might be the kind of people that will later on down the line cause trouble for you and your ministry. So not everybody who gets out their checkbook is somebody that you necessarily want to have participating in the financial side of your ministry, which is hard because, missionary raising support, like I said, it's kind of this daunting task in front of us, and we're usually just thankful to accept money from anybody. And it might be doctrinal. It might be just our philosophy of ministry that's different. It might just be their motivation for giving. It might be character issues. And so you're going to have to wrestle through those. And I think you should. If you're raising support, you should wrestle with those questions. Should I be receiving money from this church? Should I be receiving money from these people? To be honest, most missionaries don't even ask that question. Money comes in and they see that as a blessing from God. So anyway, it's something to think about. And again, one of the things I love about teaching this class is I feel like you guys are hearing things that I never heard before going to the field. You guys are learning from perhaps my mistakes and seeing it in a different perspective. I say most of the time when we're talking about a class like this for preparing students for the mission field, the teacher's not saying, he's not saying reject supporters. That's not something you hear. So I want you guys to really think through some of these things, because again, if I had known much of what I'm telling you guys, things would have been very different on the field. Yeah, John.
Advice. Absolutely.
And it depends. It depends on how much underfunded. If you're like, if you don't have, right, exactly. If you have barely enough money to scrape together for a ticket, it's probably not the wisest thing to do. And even as a mission board, one of our obligations is to our missionaries. We need to make sure that they're taken care of on the mission field and help them to be providing for their family on the field. So there is a balance between having this cavalier attitude to go to the mission field and having prudence and just good judgment. And I think many times in our culture, the way our culture does missions is we lean towards the preparation and the security side rather than depending on God and faith. So again, there's this balance. But I think you need an element of both, and you need to step out in faith. There needs to be some element of faith. And so, yeah, for our missionaries, we do as a mission organization send them to the field, even if they're not completely funded. But other mission organizations have a different philosophy, and you have to be fully funded, have a certain amount of money coming in, have a certain amount of money in the bank, and only then can you go to the mission field. But that's different than what we do at Tent Makers. Yeah, Pat?
To John's illustration, I mean, at what dollar amount then does, I mean, it really become faith? Because, I mean, if you feel a direct call on your life to do this, and, I mean, in the instance of Bruce Olson, I mean, every single missionary stopped at him and said, well, do you not care to do this? And but he realized his call, he stepped out of faith, and I mean, he got there, didn't have anything, and yet God still provided in his instance. Mm-hmm. And while wisdom is good, and we should, you know, always seek to not necessarily try to dig a hole deep so we can see how God can get us out of it, but nonetheless, you know, is there a dollar amount in TBM's eyes that
but no, there's no set amount because we know that every situation is different. So it's all based on the context of who we're dealing with, where they're going, what kind of ministry they're involved in, opportunities for tent making. Even when you look at at tent making in the New Testament, I think it plays into this question because, you know, Paul in going to these places, he had this plan and the strategy for providing for their ministry through tent making. So in opportunities where Paul had no income, he just got busy, he got his hands dirty, you know, he got to work. And he said, this is the way that God has provided for me right now to provide for my ministry, I'm going to do tent making. And so tent making wasn't, tent making was just a strategy to prepare Paul to do ministry in context when he was under-supported. And that's been part of Tent Maker's philosophy, is like if we send somebody to the field and they have opportunities for tent making, why should we require them to have full support before going, right? They're going to be working, doing tent making work there. And by any means, by all means possible, they're going to be providing for the ministry that God has called them to. One caveat or one maybe caution I would say in relation to that is often when people go to the mission field on faith, just kind of in this reckless, cavalier way, many times people who suffer are either the nationals or the other missionaries who are there. So don't just go on faith and then be a burden to people on the mission field. That's not a good strategy too. And I think there's a lot of people that perhaps do that. And even to be honest, maybe that's what we did. We were heavily dependent on our Indian friends. And not necessarily in the financial way, though. God had always taken care of us financially. But, yeah, I think there's no such thing as an independent missionary. And I want you guys to remember that. And that's one thing I'm becoming more mindful of as a director of an organization, is that when I send a person to a new field and he makes contacts with other missionaries, that impacts their ministry as well. So be mindful and be aware of the impact that you have around you and the people that you're dealing with. It is okay to depend on people, but don't take advantage of them. So that's probably the only word of caution I would say as far as stepping out in faith and going to a new place, doing something kind of reckless. You guys need a little bit of recklessness, but do it with wisdom as well. Like Paul, when he went to a place, he had a plan, even if he was under-supported. I think it is foolhardy to go to a place with no money in your pocket and have no idea how the money is going to come in, have no plan or strategy. That's not biblical. That's not what we see in the New Testament. That's not what we see in the book of Acts. So if God has called you to ministry, yeah, by all means, go and do everything possible to support yourself on the field. But do it with wisdom and a little recklessness. But it's good. Any other thoughts regarding that? One thing about corresponding, and we talked a little about correspondence of newsletters and emails, and we talked about managing that well in your ministry and balancing that, not doing it, not spending so much time corresponding that it impacts your ministry in a negative way. I also wanted to talk about the responses that people are going to have to your newsletters. And this is something I found over and over again through the years that we've been sending newsletters out. People will not read them in the way that you expect them to read them. And this maybe has to do with the poor communication on my part. But communication is difficult. Sometimes we would say something. We would make a comment. Things would be going really hard, and we would try to say it in a genuine way, like we're having a really difficult time. And nobody would respond. It would be like crickets. Like, it would be discouraging because, you know, here we kind of bared our soul in our newsletter and told them how challenging and difficult things were being, and then there was really no response. And come to find out later, they didn't understand the difficulties we were going through. Then there would be other times when we were talking, we would make some kind of passing comment that wasn't really a big deal, but people would blow that way out of proportion and make it seem like that was a huge deal to us. And we'd be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We come back and everybody would be like, are you guys okay? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, we're fine. Like, but they would read it differently than we anticipated. And so I want you guys to prepare for that and understand that's going to happen. No matter how well you communicate or well you think you're communicating, people are always going to read it in a different way than you expect. And so you need to have that kind of two-way conversation so that you know what they're thinking, rather than them kind of blowing it out of proportion without your knowledge, and then you coming and finding out that everybody's been really worried about you for no reason, or not worried about you when they should have been. That's true. I mean, I can't think of how many times that happened. Seems like almost every newsletter there was something that would they would either read too much into or too little. So to keep that in mind, and that's why your skill as a communicator is so important. And you need to improve and grow in your English skills or whatever language you're communicating in, Spanish, Portuguese, whatever it is, to your supporters, so that you can authentically just make sure that they know what is happening in your ministry. And again, we're striving for transparency. We're striving to be open and honest with them. Don't be afraid to tell them that things are going poorly. There is the sense where many missionaries just want to put their best foot forward. We talked about that last time. I want you guys to be more mature than that. I think your generation is. To be honest, I think your generation is more willing and open to say, look, I'm struggling. And I appreciate that a lot. I think my generation and older, they want to make sure that they have this appearance. So I do appreciate your guys' honesty and transparency. And I think that should be reflected in your newsletters as well and your correspondence. And don't make it all just newsletters, too. It shouldn't be just newsletters. You guys should be corresponding individually with people. And actually, we'll talk about this new too on the page 45. Talking about individual supporters, keep in touch with them. It's never been easier to talk to people, to write to people. We don't have to wait months between letters. We can just shoot them an email. We can even send them a text. Yesterday, one of our best supporters, he was one of my youth leaders, and he has been so faithful in praying for us for years, for decades. And he's an elder at our church. He was just texting me, like, how are you guys doing? I heard Wyoming is having a lot of, COVID cases. Are you guys doing okay? And so I was able to just write it back, and we texted back and forth. So those conversations are meaningful, and they connect you with people. So don't neglect that. Don't think, like, I've written a newsletter, so I've done my job, corresponded with people. Spend of the maximum of 5 hours a week that you're spending, don't put all that into your newsletter. Just make sure a lot of that is just corresponding to people back home. So again, contact people individually. We talked about choosing your supporters. And then this is an important part. Probably the most important thing I want you to know about your supporters is that you have an obligation to pray for them as well. Get to know what their prayer requests are so that you can be faithfully praying for them. Don't see them as a resource. See them as a relationship. People that you are connected with, people that you are close to, and people that you are praying for. It has to do with churches, but also individuals that are supporting you, even individuals within churches that might not necessarily personally support you, but be praying for them. And I think this is something interesting that I remember Ron talking about before. You as a missionary have an obligation to not just one church, but many churches. And you have many supporters. And one of the things Ron said years ago that I thought was really had a lot of wisdom in it is like when a pastor has a moral failure, it affects the congregation deeply, right? It affects a congregation. But when a missionary has a moral failure, it affects multiple congregations. Now, I want you guys to think about that and think about the responsibility that you have in your testimony as you are a person that is a visible representation of the Christian life among multiple congregations. That's something that I think we don't think about. I think sometimes we as a missionary, we think ourselves disconnected. We think ourselves as pioneers and lone rangers, but the truth is when a missionary fails, it affects multiple congregations. It affects, instead of hundreds of people, it's affecting thousands of people. So just consider that as you think about decisions, as you think about your obligation and your testimony. So I want to talk about ascending church too. Now, I think, I don't know if this was just me or if it was part of the missionary culture and the Christian culture that I grew up in. But for some reason, I think I had this idea that the ascending church and another supporting churches were essentially the same. They would all just give money and support us on the mission field. Lately, as I've grown and matured myself, I've realized that there's a difference between your sending church and other supporting churches. And you need to recognize that difference. You need to understand that difference. You need to place more importance on your sending church, no matter how much money they give or don't give. There is a relationship there that is critical. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why. I have it divided into two categories: one before you go to the field, and one while you're on the field. So before you go, just think about this: your church should be a part of your call. If the pastor of your church, if the people, elders, and leadership of your church are hesitant about you being called to the mission field, you should. It should cause you at least to pause and to reflect on that. Because I think God uses the ministry of the local church and the leadership of the local church and the people of the local church to confirm the call that God has given to us. Now, there are situations where they might be resistant to you going to the mission field, and you know that God has called you, and that you have to say, I'm sorry, this is what God has called me to. I'm not going to be dissuaded by your hesitancy. But for the most part, I think in the vast majority of times, the church is a part of your call to missions. And I think for you pastors, I want you to be thinking about this as you look and see people in your congregation, and God is prompting you and God is leading you to say, hey, listen, I think God might be calling you to the mission field. I think more pastors should be saying those exact words, and they're not. I think pastors should be looking for people in their congregation that they can send. And there's this corporate aspect too. I think Helsinger mentions that. This corporate aspect to the call. This fact that you are not just, the call is not an individual thing. Not just an individual thing. It is also involved within the sending church. So I want you to think about that. Really, if you feel called to missions, or if you're wondering even, if you're questioning, okay, what does God want me to do? Talk to your sending church. And if you don't have a sending church, ultimately you need to be part of one. You need to find one. You need that. And I would say even before you go to the field, look for opportunities to serve in your local church. Become a part of the ministry in different ways. We have the privilege of being the youth directors at Kaysville. And we were there for, I think, 3 years before we went to the mission field. So I dropped out of Bible college, came back, and I studied my anthropology degree at Weber State. And one of the reasons was I wanted to be a part of my local church. I didn't want to just show up on the doorstep and say, "Now give me money, I'm going to the mission field." But I was there for a few years, and that was a neat time. It was a neat time for Connie and I to be involved in the ministry of the local church there. And we were able to give back and to be a part of the ministry and develop good relationships with people there. And then the next one there is develop strong relationships with those who will faithfully pray for you and keep you from being one of the forgotten. It might be the pastor, but most often this is some old lady, little old lady in the church. Those are the people you want to target, right? Find the little old ladies in your church that you know are going to be faithful and pray for you. Those are the best supporters you can find. There are people in Connie's home church. They have this sweetest oldest couple. They're both with the Lord now. But they had this little closet room where they had a map, and they had all these missionaries, and they would go and they would actually just pray for hours in this closet. Those are the people you want on your team. Those are the people you want supporting you. So find those people in your sending church. And what happens is they become your advocates. So they're the ones that are communicating with you, and they're the ones who are presenting your needs and your prayer requests before the congregation and saying, hey, let's not forget to pray for, pray for our missionaries, and they let you know specific requests that they let the congregation know specific requests that you have given, because they're the ones that are praying for you. So those, like, one little old lady prays for you is worth like 10 people that are sending checks. I guarantee it. Find those in your sending church. Those people that are going to be faithful and praying for you. Those are yeah, those are the best supporters to find. And again, they're going to keep your ministry at the forefront of the church and before the congregation. And you will not be forgotten. My grandma is one for us. She is kind of the advocate for us at our sending church. So she'll turn 90 next year, but she has more energy than I do. She has more energy than Elijah, which she's like this. I wish you could meet Nanny. She's just amazing. And those are the kind of people you want. But then on the field, like, again, we spend so much time talking about pre-field, like support raising, and we forget that most of our ministry for the rest of our lives is going to be on the mission field, not support raising. At least hopefully not. But on the field, I want you to understand the authority of the local church. You are accountable to your sending church. If you do fall into moral failure, it is the responsibility of the local church to bring church discipline and to get involved. And make sure your pastor knows that. Make sure your pastor understands that you know where the authority lies, that you know that you are accountable to that local church, the sending church. And don't be afraid to reach out for help. And this is not necessarily financial help, but if you need encouragement, if you need counsel, you know, see your pastor as a resource. See the leadership of your church as a resource. I know they've been invaluable for me over the years. So in different times when I've had questions and I've struggled with things, they have always been there for me. And I've talked a little bit about my relationship with my sending church. I feel like I have over and over like really stretched that relationship, stressed their understanding of mission, I've been kind of a thorn in their side in a sense. I felt that way, but in spite of that, they have been so supporting and so supportive of us and our ministry. I can't say enough good things about my sending church and the way that they've been kind of a model of what a sending church should look like. Even when I've not been a model of what a missionary should look like, especially in things like correspondence and newsletters. We've not been faithful for that, but our church has been always understanding, and they know us, and they've always been praying for us. And this is a big thing I wanted to talk about. This is one thing that I faced, is your church is going to change. Your sending church is going to be different. So every time you come back, it's going to be a little bit more different. And eventually, you're going to be in a place where you don't know a lot of the people there. You might have grown up in the church. And there's going to be the old, faithful, you know, people that have always been there, people that will always be there until they're with the Lord. But there are going to be changes. It might even be the changes in the pastor and in the leadership of the church. So, you know, that's a challenge for you as a missionary on the mission field. How do you deal with those kind of changes and transitions between leadership? And so we've gone through that. Thankfully, I mean, we knew the current pastor. He was assistant pastor, and so there we'd always, we've been friends for years, even before he became the pastor. But there are changes that happen when you're on the mission field, and you need to anticipate those, and you need to prepare for those. So whenever you come back for a visit, spend time in your home church. Spend time with your sending church. And not just a week or two, like block out a significant amount of time where you can be involved in the local church. Even do some kind of ministry. I have in the notes, like just teach a Sunday school class. Say, could I do a series on, you know, the book of 1 John or something like that. And teach an adult Sunday school class. Something like that. Even teach one of the kids classes and involve yourself in the ministry of the church for a set amount of time. Now, it's obviously not going to be a long amount. You want to get back to the field. But those kind of moments will reintegrate you into the local church and help you form relationships with other people that have come and are part of the church now. And I have like a paragraph there on the missions agency, which is really sad because it should be more, especially because that's kind of my role now. Next time, you guys won't benefit from that, but I'll expand that and talk about the relationship a missionary has with their mission organization. But for the most part, it has to do with the mission organization is there to support and encourage the missionary, not as a burden. I mean, you should fill out the paperwork in a timely manner, but the mission organization should understand also that you are busy doing ministry in the field. Yeah, John.
So, just going back to the main reel in your newsletter, how do you balance being real but also not complaining?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. How do you balance being real and not complaining? I think have your wife or your spouse read it. that's probably the first step, because they know you and they know when you're complaining or when you're being honest and genuine. But I would say that's part of the struggle. That's part of the struggle of editing and revising and thinking through your words carefully so that you communicate well. And then even perhaps if you are worried about it, send it to some trusted, like one of your mentors or one of your, even the pastor of your sending church, saying, listen, I don't want this to come across as something that I'm complaining about, but I just wanted to be kind of transparent with people. You know, your pastor would appreciate that. Your pastor would be appreciative of you looking at him as a resource. And he would be one that would help give you a good understanding about how it's going to be interpreted. So you might have some people that you can just kind of throw a draft copy in front of and say, listen, can you give me some thoughts about this? And just be honest with them. Say, things are hard, but I wanted to come across in a way that's not complaining. That's a great question. Any other thoughts when it comes to kind of our connections and relationships? For this past couple of weeks, we've been talking about relationships both on the field and at home. We've talked about relationships with kind of the host family, with the lost, with the government, with our immediate family, with our extended family, with our churches and mission and other missionaries, our teammates. So we've recognized that there are relationships that all of us have to deal with, right? I mean, that's part of living. That's part of the way God has wired us. We need relationships. But when you enter into missionary work, it is twice as complicated because you're dealing with these relationships at home, but you're also dealing with relationships on the field. So that's why I imagine the administration have seen the need for this class. This PR and missions, because relationships are important, and it's important how we deal with those things. So, really, anything from this class that we've talked about, you guys have any questions, comments, stories, jokes? That's a great question. So the question is, do you think there's a point where a church can support too many missionaries? I would say theoretically, yes, but I don't know if I've ever seen it. And I wanted to, maybe I'll brag on my sending church again. I think I mentioned this before. Caseville gives 40% of their budget to missions, which is insane. Most churches are excited when they're giving 10 or 15%. They think they're doing great. But Caseville is a very, very missions-minded church, and God has blessed them, and they support dozens and dozens of missionaries. I think the problem will happen when you're supporting so many missionaries that some are kind of getting lost in the cracks, and they're not being prayed for, they're not being communicated with, which I think has been an issue with Caseville. So they support a lot of missionaries, and a lot of their budget goes to missions, but sometimes they haven't been able to focus, or it's been challenging for them to focus on missionaries like they should. And but yeah, I think that's something that potentially could happen. But I think a church could fail in their missions program even if they're supporting just two missionaries, and they could fail in the same ways and not communicating with their missionaries, not giving enough of their money that comes in to missions. So I don't know if that has to do with the amount of the percentage of your budget or the amount of missionaries you have. I think it has to do with the characteristics of the church and the kind of the vision and the drive of the church to participate in missions. If that makes sense. It's a good question though. Any other thoughts, questions before we get into this next part? Yeah, Josh.
You made a comment about how your church will change during the times that you're gone. And be prepared for that change and how it can be difficult. What if it changes to an extent that you don't really feel like it's actually the church that you can be attending anymore?
Right. There might come a point where you have to find a different sending church, which is, to be honest, one of the most difficult things and one of the most challenging things that could happen to a missionary. I would say if it comes to the point where you don't feel comfortable having that church as your sending church, you need to come back from the field. You need to integrate with some other church, become familiar with that ministry, and be, come to a point where you're comfortable saying and asking, would you be my sending church? And that might take years, actually. When you come back from the field, find a new sending church, get involved in the ministry, ask them to be sending church, go back and raise support, and then go to mission field. It could really hinder your ministry on the foreign field. But I think it's so important that it needs to be addressed. So there are a few things that I think should bring missionaries back and cause them to have to stop immediately and come back. I think issues with the sending church is one of them. I think your immediate family in those kind of situations, that's important too. But yeah, I think if you come to a point where you're uncomfortable, you need to start that dialogue, and you can't just pretend it's not there. I think a lot of missionaries do. A lot of missionaries pretend like those problems don't exist. And then the longer you wait, the more painful it's going to be, the more difficult it's going to be. But yeah, that's a really good question. It's like a toothache, right? If you don't deal with it, it's going to get worse until eventually you just have to rip that tooth out. And So don't let it go, don't let it fester. Deal with things, and we've had this happen with some of our missionaries at 10 Acres as well. So it's a real thing. Any other comments or questions? Yeah. Yeah, there are different perspectives, and I think you need to wrestle with this individually before God about how you can be authentic in raising support. And there are historically three people that we look to for an example, and I think we'll address this in missions prep. But Mueller is one of them, and then Taylor and Moody. Those three were contemporaries with one another, and they had vastly different strategies for raising support. So Mueller was like, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm just going to let God supply. Nobody's going to even know. And God did. God supplied in miraculous ways. And George Mueller had a successful ministry in an orphanage. And so that's one perspective. Hudson Taylor had a more balanced approach, kind of in between. Well, let me just jump to Moody. Moody's like, we need money. Can you give us money? So he was very forthright. He was very upfront. and people gave money, and he had a successful ministry, and God provided for him through that. Hudson Taylor was kind of in between. Hudson Taylor would not ask for money, but he would let people know what the needs were. And he'd say, you know, these are the things that we need. You know, would you pray for us? And so as people prayed, then people would give. I find myself more in the Hudson Taylor category. And to be honest, I don't think there is a right way and a wrong way. I don't think Moody, I'm definitely not going to judge Moody and say that he was sinning and wrong. But I think you have to understand your, what is genuine and authentic for you and how you can do it in a way that where you are not having, kind of the wrong motivations in asking for money. This is a real issue that you have to deal with and wrestle with. I think there is a way, like we talked about, like the thermometers and like, you know, those kind of things that are just, maybe they're not sinful, but they're cheesy and they're, you know, don't be like a televangelist, okay? We have an example of what not to do whenever we turn on the TV and see a preacher. Like, send your check in and we'll give you this vial of holy water or whatever, or this you know, you can sprinkle it on your car engine and it will start again. You know, there's all sorts of crazy charlatans out there. And my fear is that, you know, the more we are forthright about asking for money, the more we look like a televangelist. And they have brought reproach upon the name of Christ, and it's incredibly upsetting for me. I don't have anything to do with that. So I guess maybe as a reaction to that, I've kind of moved more towards Mueller and Taylor. But do things in a genuine way. And again, I think if we are always bringing ourselves back to the focus of prayer and raising prayer support, it's not going to be an issue. We're not going to be ones that look greedy or look like we're trying to get money. I think that's one of the safeguards that I would say when you're raising support. Just get people to pray for you. When people ask, like, what can they do? Just say, pray for me. Pray for us. And don't go any further. Let them pray. And like I said, if people pray for you, the money will follow. And you'll get the money that God wants you to have. And God will provide for you. And I feel like God provides in multiple ways. God provides like in Moody's way, in Taylor's way, and in Mueller's way. But there's a greater blessing for the Muellers and the Taylors because we get to see God provide in ways that we wouldn't had we just asked for the money. And we've mentioned this before. Like you'll find God doing very creative things, very interesting things, and providing in ways that you had never anticipated. And the blessing of that is it confirms and gives you this confirmation, like, yeah, we're in the right place, we're doing the right ministry. God is a part of this. If you ask somebody for money and they give you money, you don't have that blessing. You don't know if it was just twisting their arm or if it was really the Lord leading and the Holy Spirit working in their life. So, again, it's something personal to wrestle with. And for those of you who are taking missions prep, we'll get into this in more detail and talk about kind of building your own philosophy and your own strategy to deal with this exact question. That's great. Any other questions or comments? We are out of time, aren't we? Do you guys have any class today during chapel time? Okay. You guys have a free hour. So let's just keep going. I'm just kidding. I won't do that. As much as I would want to and love to, but so we're going to wrap things up on Tuesday again. I want you to be thinking from now until then, what are the core components or the key characteristics of a missionary? What are the key characteristics of a pastor? And then if we have a chance, we'll look at the local church. And we've talked about these things. I just want to pull them all together and have one final lecture encouraging you guys. Like, this is the ideal that we are all reaching for. Whether you are a part of the missions track or whether you're part of the pastoral track, this is what we want to attain to. So be thinking about that, and we'll have a discussion. And hopefully I'll have some notes together for you to complete the section of notes. And, that's it. Thanks. Have a great day. Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, guys, one more thing. A couple announcements. There is Indian food tonight. So if you do want to come, please come and let me know so we know how much to prepare. Also, you might notice a big hole by our house and a big pile of dirt that is growing. We are digging our basement by hand for our new house that we're building next year. So tomorrow we want to have a digging party. So if you like to dig in the dirt, you're welcome to come over. We'll start after lunch and we'll go until dinner time. We have pizza for dinner. So it might sound like we are trying to extort manual labor with pizza. And yes, that is exactly what we're trying to do. So if you want to come over and play in the dirt and dig, we're starting tomorrow after lunch. We'll do that. Let me know if you want to be part of that. I have like 16, 20 shovels and 7 wheelbarrows. So we should have enough for anybody who wants to come and join us. And then you can have pizza with us as well. So Indian food tonight, digging party tomorrow. Thank you, guys. See you.